don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. The air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman, because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crying in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Welcome to Toward Anarchy. Thank you so much for joining me. I am Michael Storm, and we are just, it's just always so great to be back here and do this every time. It doesn't matter. As long as I'm here, I'm happy. I'm in front of my mic. I'm talking to my peeps. I'm doing my thing. And I appreciate you taking the time to join me and kick in and just hang out, and we'll see what happens. You know, we never know where this thing goes, because I do a lot of talking to people that I don't know. That's right. Part of the fun, right? You don't know somebody, you don't know what they're about. You dive in, you want to find out. And so that's what we do here. And we will dive into a fantastic conversation here with Joseph Mba. I believe that's right. And yeah. We'll get all the details here with Joseph in just a minute, and we'll talk about him. He's a producer and director and writer, and we'll see what he's up to. And we'll talk about his movie, Whispers Bind. We'll do all that here in just a moment. But real quick, before we get into it, click the like button, click that subscribe button, whatever it is. It's one of the biggest things that you can do to support the show. And it lets me know that you appreciate what I'm doing. Also, support Republic Broadcasting. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on that donate button over on the left-hand side. It wouldn't be possible. It is possible. Obviously, I can do this. I could do this, but I have a family. I have a home. I have a place, a network, and people, and it's a fantastic thing, and it's all because of you guys who have supported it over the years. It's been around for a long time, Republic Broadcasting, so continue the trend. Click that donate button. Make a one-time donation or a regular donation, whatever. It's up to you. If you're not into the digital thing, you know, like those buttons, push some other buttons on the phone. Give us a call, 800-724-2719, extension 3. Or of course, you can always visit shoprbn.com for the win-win. You support the advertisers. They continue to advertise across the network. It's a fantastic, beautiful relationship that we all share in. And it's all thanks to you. So continue to do that for us. So let's do this. Let's dive into this. I'm a member of this Podmatch thing, right? You guys know this. I've been talking about this for a while now. And I ran into Joseph on Podmatch, and he has this movie, and he's done all this other work in TV and production and direction and just movies. And there's just all this stuff that I like to talk about, the technical things, the stuff that's going on in the background. Yeah, I love the movies. I love to see all that stuff. But, you know, my father is he makes movies out there in California, B movies. You may have seen one, too. It's a possibility. So it's something, it's in the blood, you know. And so when I get a chance to talk to somebody like Joseph, I want to jump on the opportunity. Plus, I don't want to always sit here talking about all this obnoxious, crazy political stuff that's going on in the world. We got to take a break and have a little bit of fun and talk to some real people instead of these fake politicians, which is funny when you're talking about Hollywood people or you know, producers in movies, real people.
Like, yeah, right. Like, are you sure about that?
Joseph, I appreciate you coming in and hanging out, my friend. Tell me a little bit about yourself, how it is that you're into making movies, how you ended up here today having a chat with me.
Man, it's been a long journey. I've been at it now for 15 years. I got into it when I was 17, graduated from high school. I'm originally from Nigeria, and then I accidentally fell into filmmaking because I didn't actually understand that people made movies. Like, the way I saw movies was the same way that I saw, you know, cars or grocery on the shelf at the stores. Like I, you go into the store, you're like, I want to buy this Pop-Tart. I bought the Pop-Tart. You know, I did not know people made Pop-Tarts, you know? So I, the same way, I didn't understand that people made movies. But the funny story about that is that, you know, when I eventually discovered filmmaking, then I started taking a look back and realized that my older brother was an actor. And then I remember in New York, he used to bring home scripts and do auditions all the time. And then I remembered he was like he was like featured extras in a lot of like MTV music videos. And then I remembered I used to tell my friends about it. Like, I don't know what I'm a weirdo. Okay. So, so I got into filmmaking by accident because of a high school senior year project where my teacher, you know, my English teacher, she was teaching us like point of view and storytelling. And she's like, I'm tired of this. Is your final project. You got to do something exciting, something that's creative. And I remember I came home one day, same day, actually, came home from school. We were living in Palm Springs, California. We'd moved from New York to Palm Springs. So it's like going from cold to hot, which I'm from Nigeria, so I'm used to the hot, right? But not Palm Springs hot. Like Palm Springs hot is a different kind of hot. So it was like a bajillion degrees hot. And my mom was standing in our garage and she wouldn't let me go inside. So her and I were standing in the garage and it was hot. And I remember it, man. It felt like the sun was on me, even in the garage. So anyway, she was just like, hey, son, you know, I know you want to go into the military. I know you want to go into the Air Force. Like, I see what you're trying to do. But as your mom, I don't see that you're going to do that with your life. I see you doing something that comes natural to you, something that runs in your blood, something that's in the family. Like, you need to really think about this again. I was like, mom, like, I've already decided what I'm doing. Like, this is not a conversation. But because of knowing my mom, like, I just know that she gets this look in her eyes where I'm like, oh, crap. Okay, no, she's not playing around. So I just sat there and I thought about it. And when I started thinking about what is it that comes to me naturally, what is it that runs in the blood? And I'm like, oh, wait, my uncle was a musician and he had a record deal. Oh, we have a family band that I've been playing in this band since I was a kid. Oh, my dad used to be a sculptor. He's an artist. Even though he's a school teacher, he was also the art teacher. And then all of this started making sense. And then also the same day, I went inside and I watched the movie SWAT. And for the first time, I did what I normally don't do. I clicked to the behind the scenes, the bonus features of the DVD. Never done that before. And then my mind was blown because for the first time I saw the people who were behind the movie. Like, I saw this craftsmanship and this, like, it just blew my mind. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. So I said to myself, I'm like, I'm going to use my high school senior year project as a way to make a short film. And I was like, if this short film goes well, then this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And intuitively, like, I've never written a script before, anything like that. So I just took my notebook and I was ripping off of movies that I've seen before. And I wrote my own version of this particular movie. And I made myself the main character and I just wrote everybody in it. And I went and told my friend and she borrowed her dad's, point and shoot digital camera. And before you know, we're in the school, we're shooting all of this. And I just had so much fun. Like, I'm usually a kid who, like, I'm always in my imagination. I wanted, like, the reason why I wanted to go into the Air Force, because I wanted to get into aeronautical engineering, because I wanted to build planes. I wanted to eventually invent something cool, you know? But this, being a filmmaker, like, just served that side of my brain so much that I was like, and then, not only that, but after we had made this short film, and I guarantee you it is as bad and even worse as you think it is, okay? And then we showed it in class and everybody was dying laughing. They loved it. And then my English teacher was so impressed by the effort that we put in that she went and got our school principal to come and watch this short film. And I've never seen a school principal in person up to that point. And oh my God, there he is. Like, so it's just like, it was just a whirlwind of like, wow, wow, wow. I can't believe, wow. I can't believe, wow. And then all of a sudden I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And then I started to look into like, what does it take to be a filmmaker? Oh, you got to go to school. You got to go to film school. And then I started looking at all the tuition and my mom was like, I'm not paying for that. So long story short, man, I ended up going to a community college in Arizona because I found a cheap private college in Arizona. But by the time we got here to Arizona, we actually got lost, ended up we exited out of the freeway. This is 08. So if anyone would be like, why did you get lost? There's GPS. No, this is like, you had to buy GPS and we didn't have GPS. So I was like holding up the map, you know? And so we definitely got lost in a new state that we've never been at before. And then so we exited out of the freeway and we saw another college, a community college. And my mom's like, okay, we're going to go in there and ask for directions. We go into the college. I'm sitting in the lobby, like 30, 45 minutes past. And my mom shows up. She's like, all right, I saw you enrolled. Here's this, your pamphlet. Here's this year's. I'm like, what the hell? Mom, what? We were going through this. She's like, no, I got it. I'm like, mom, but what about filmmaking? She's like, no, I got to figure it out. She's like, see that guy walking up to you right now? Yeah, I'm like, that's Tony Deshay. He is your film teacher and he's also the guidance counselor. Tony, meet Joe. Joe, meet Tony. Shake hands. And the rest was history. And that is how I started filmmaking.
That's wild. That is a wild story. I love it. I think it's great because you didn't, you looked around, you said, yeah, there's some things out there I could do, but right here, I've got these things going on. Let's bring that pool of talent together and in myself and the people around me and make my thing happen. That's really cool. And then your mother, that's hilarious. That's such a great, you know, human story right there. Oh yeah, we're on our way here and we took a detour over here and now we're here. And this, right. You know, I mean, that's such a great life thing. It's always being sort of open and ready to make that change, you know, to take that different exit. That's really cool. Man. It's neat that your mother put you in that situation.
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah, So then, I mean, now you're doing the thing, right? You've got your own company, Paradox Universe. That's what it is. It's paradoxuniverse.net, and people can go there. And I'll put all these links on the page, as I always do, so people can come and find them later if they don't remember them while we're sitting here chatting. But it's a really neat thing you got going on there. I was checking out the website and it looks like it's kind of a family affair. I know I see a couple of the same name, last name rolling around in there and that sort of thing. And that's great because, and no better thing to do than to work with those that you know and to bring the people that you care about and that you're around in on your thing and share with them. That's a great deal.
Yes. Yeah, no, it is definitely a family affair. It's just the way that my mom raised me, you know. I can do a lot alone, but it's better to do with the people that you love and care for. And so I've always ever since that first short film, I've always involved any and anyone who comes in contact in my orbit. I'm like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. Are you interested in, you know, and that's kind of how it goes. And eventually I met this wonderful girl who thought I was cool because up to that point, a lot of the other girls didn't think I was very cool because here's this nerd running around with cameras trying to shoot stuff. But she's like, oh my God, this is so fascinating. And she was like, she was going everywhere with me, man. I'm like, so like there was this point in my life where I needed a way to both make money and get a lot of experience. And the way I came up with it, I was like, it was like early 2010-ish, like YouTube music videos was like really a thing for musicians. And I looked around and I was like, man, you know, there's a lot of I call them bedroom artists, because like bigger artists, they have money. They will go to other people. But I'm like, there's a lot of artists who records at home who just want music videos that can't afford the big budget. So I came up with this thing I called the $50 music video. First, it was like $200. I didn't get any bite, $100. But as soon as I put $50, like the floodgates open, and I posted it on Craigslist. So I was like shooting $50 music videos a lot. And here is my wife. Well, she's now my wife, but then she was just this girl who we were just friends. Okay. We were just friends for a long time. So like we were like going around town. I mean, like she would get off work, come pick me up, and then we would drive across town to like the middle of the ghetto in the middle of nowhere to meet said artist to shoot this music video. And by the way, we had no gas in our car. So we were hoping that when we finish shooting the music video, we'll get money from the artist so that we can put gas in the car so we can get home. And then we're like, you know, we'll get there and I'll shoot all these videos. And we're like, we had a formula. Like he's like, hey, you get one location, you get like three, you get two scenes, you get two shots. Like we had it all figured out. You know, like I say, at least 50% of the time, this was like the story. Like we would get there, the artist would let us shoot the video. And at the end of the video, we're supposed to get 50%. So we'll get $25, which to us was like, okay, great. We can put $10 gas and drive home, and then you can buy food with the other money. And then you can, you know, so, but anyway, artists would let me finish shooting the video, and they hit me with the, hey, bro, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? I ain't get paid yet, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, but like, when we break up, finna eat, you know what I'm saying? I'm finna break you off, feel me? But here you go, like, I'm gonna get like $10. I'm like, what am I gonna do with $10, man? Like, what do you, I drove like from, and if anyone doesn't understand Arizona is not a place that has great public transportation. So it's all driving. So I just drove like miles and I have no gas in my car. And now I'm here with this girl and I only got $10. So like we put $5 gas to barely make it back home, and then use the other $5 to buy taco from like Jack in a Box for 50 cents a taco. And that became our food. That happened a lot. But she just, you know, later on, I asked him, like, so what was going through your head the whole time? She's like, I was just having fun. I'm like, so, yeah, no, she's the one, you know. So that's why, I mean, for a lot of other reasons, but that, yeah, that's why my wife she's my right-hand collaborator for sure.
That's great. It's just another wonderful, you know, great story. I think it resonates. I think your story here really resonates with people. It does with me even a little bit. Obviously I'm not from Nigeria, I've been around. I've been a few places. I've met different people. I've done different, you know, I'm not one of the people that, even though I am here in Kansas at the moment, just sort of literally in the middle of America, in the middle of nowhere, in one of the flyover states, I actually have been from one side of the country to the other and done a lot of different things and met a lot of different people. And I think it's just a good normal thing, right? Yeah. We're all on our path. We all have these choices to make around us. There's things going on around us that influence us and influence our decisions, and we just have to make those right choices. And you have to follow the happiness, and you have to follow that bliss. And it sounds like that's what you guys did, and it sounds like you did it together, and that's really neat. That's another thing that resonates with me too, because I met my wife when I was fairly young as well, in and around college age, and so we've been together for 30 plus years now, and so we've had a lot of we've done the journey together, we've followed our happiness together. Like that's really cool. Really, it's a neat story. I love the fact that you watch SWAT. I'm just guessing there's not that many, you know, there's not that many people out there that went, yeah, I watched SWAT and decided to get into making movies. Love Michael Biehn, right? It was Michael Biehn, right? In SWAT, and some other guys, but I you know, but it's SWAT. Come on.
Yeah, exactly, man. To me, it was a great entryway movie because like I loved action movies growing up. Like I watched Jackie Chan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone. So like So to have an action movie be the first thing I saw the behind the scenes of, and see, like, I actually saw, like, they had, like, this breakaway walls and they actually rammed the trucks in there. Like, I'm like, oh my God, they did that for real. So yeah, it was great. It's great.
Where a movie like SWAT, I think, is probably a perfect movie to look at the behind the scenes. You said you went, you know, that was the first time that you went and flipped through the sort of extras and things on the DVD or Blu-ray there. And that seems like one of those movies where it would be, because it is an action movie. There's a lot of technical stuff going on in there. Mm-hmm. Very cool. A good start. I'm poking some fun at it, but it's actually considered a really good movie.
It's a good movie.
What are you going to do? I mean, a good movie is a good movie, right?
So
tell me a little bit about Whispers Behind, because that's what you got going on now, and it's about to drop. The movie is done. It's about to release.
my teacher, my film teacher, Tony Deshaies, he's, you know, there's this thing. He's like, yeah, your project is never done. Your project escapes you. So Whispers Behind have escaped my grasp and is going out into the world. I am personally proud of the movie, and it's the first movie that I truly, like, and I've been saying this to everyone, is like, it's the first movie that I truly enjoyed the process of making the movie from start to finish. Like, we just had the movie premiere, and usually when we're at the movie premiere, I am anxious, I am stressed out, because I know, like, as the artist, I try to be realistic and practical with myself about what I've made. And most of the time I'm like, I made something bad. I know it's bad. I know this thing is bad. And here I am gathering all these people who helped me make it. And I know they're going to sit here and be like, oh my God, what is this? You know? But like this film, we had the screening this weekend, and a couple of things have happened throughout the process since I say, okay, I'm done with the movie. First thing, I showed it, someone I met randomly who doesn't know me, he's a movie critic, and I was just asking him questions. I wanted to ask him questions about, like, how to, you know, what to do to help promote the movie, because I honestly, like, I loved making the movie. We loved the outcome of it, but we really didn't want to promote the movie like that. Like, we really didn't. We just kind of wanted to just let it go out into the world and let it be that. And he's like, okay, we made our thing. We had fun. But he watched it and he's like, hey, man, this movie is not bad. Which, not bad to me, is like a gold star, okay? like you, but what? What? You say? And he's like, no, man, this is not bad. I think you really should. You should really promote it, and you might find a couple of people who understand what you did and might become, you know, some that might gain interest in you, you know, whatever. So I was like, huh, okay. So then it kind of led me to say, okay, maybe then we should have a premiere for it, and then all of a sudden. So long story short, we did the premiere, and we were at the theater. We had that step and repeat, and people just kept coming up and, hey, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, oh, we have this movie. And they would ask me about the movie, and then they would, like, come in and take pictures with us. Never happened. We've had premieres at movies theaters before, and people would just, like, stare at you and walk away. This time they actually came up and took pictures with us and everything. And the theater ended up being packed. Like, our cast and crew is very small in this film, but the theater ended up being packed from people who finished watching their movies, who came into our theater to watch this film. And I was sitting there, and again, I understand what I made. Like, if you're trying to see a Hollywood blockbuster, if you don't understand low budget filmmaking, I highly say, hey, please just leave this film alone. It's not for you. But if you understand low budget filmmaking and the constraints that go with it, you might have fun. And so watching this movie with an audience for the first time, like I was getting genuine reactions in places I hoped to go get those reactions, which is to me the biggest win ever, right? The things that I thought, oh, this would be funny, people found it funny. I was like, that's amazing. And the things that I did, like, okay, I want people to cringe at this moment. Like, I got this, like, man, I cannot express to you, like, the the feeling when we got to this particular part in the film and I got the gasp of people and they were like, oh my God, oh no. I was like, oh, I was like, mama, I made it. Man, so anyway, I've enjoyed making this movie from start to finish. And it started from an idea, from a conversation me and my wife and my family were having about your inner thoughts. And your inner thoughts, you yourself, you know yourself better than anyone else. So what if you became the villain? Oh, you know, that was the idea. Like, what if your inner thoughts became the villain? How much can yourself mess with yourself? And I was like, wow, I'm like, that would be a messed up situation. So, you know, it kind of sat in my head for a little bit. Then I ended up writing a short film about it. Then I made the short film. And it was like my sister and another actress and who we collaborate with all the time. I made the short film. I posted it on YouTube. This was like 2020 during the, you know, lockdown. So it was just a little crew. I posted it on YouTube, and usually when I post a video on YouTube, I would get like 100 views, 50 views, 300 views. But this time it got 6,000 views. So I was like, oh my God, this is really amazing. So I was like, I'm happy with it. We're done. Like, again, just feeling accomplished as a creative. And then years pass, and we're like thinking, oh man, we really need to make another film, another feature. And we're thinking about it, and me and my wife were shooting a concrete cleaning video for a company that cleans concrete. Not the place you would think ideas come from, right? So we're cleaning this thing, and literally we just set the cameras up, so we're watching the concrete dry. Okay, so we had time to think. So we're thinking about it, and our friend just finished having a baby, and she was talking about postpartum and what she had gone through and everything. And all of a sudden it hit me and my wife at the same time. I'm like, wait, what if we took that idea about your inner thoughts and paired it with a woman who is pregnant or who just had a baby? Like, what kind of an idea can we have? And then all of a sudden the feature film idea was born. Her and I started writing the script. We collaborated on it. And then the film kind of became what it is, and it became a story about a woman who is used to losing people in her life. She feels like every time she gets close to someone, is either they die, they leave, they exit her life in some shape or form. So she's built up a wall, and she doesn't want people to get close. And then in comes the entity, and the entity sees that she's built up this wall. She's like, okay, perfect. You're a perfect candidate. I'm going to mess with you. And then the story kind of evolves from there and delayed. So it ended up becoming more of like a relationship story about this woman and her love interest and the people in her life that care about her, and her eventually deciding, oh, you know what? I really do want love. I really do want people in my life to be a part of my life. So she's like, I'm going to fight you. I'm going to fight the demon. And the demon is like, yeah, right. Yeah, watch me. And then, so that's basically what the film is about.
That's great. It's again, another great little human story not in just the film itself, but in your talking about it, particularly for artists and creative people, because one of the reasons I like to talk to people like yourself, especially somebody like yourself who is on the cusp of, you know, sort of greatness, right? You're in that space where it could go any direction. It's all up to you and the things that happen and the people that you surround yourself with, and you're going to make it happen, and it's going to go where it's going to go. And so you're in that perfect position where you can still talk to people from that normal perspective. You know, you're not like up here. No. You know, it's not like Scorsese talking to everybody else. Oh, you're a worker. It's just something that I talk to people about. I try to express to people all the time in Hollywood, because Hollywood gets such a bad rep, and it's because of, you know, the Disneys, and it's the executives, and it's all this nonsense, and we hate the properties, and we hate the people, and we just want the money and all that, except that's not Hollywood. That's just a couple of studios. That's just a few people in Hollywood. Most of Hollywood is people like you.
Yes.
People like my father, who work hard every single day, busting your backsides to produce something that you love and that you want to share with people. And one of the biggest things is being able to take that next step. Luckily you had somebody there to point you and say, hey, you know what, this is pretty good. You should probably do something with it. This is all right. We may be able to work with this. We may be able to work with you. I mean, that's an open door in my world. But the idea that he told you, you need to do it. You need to take it out there. You need to market it. You need to sell it. Because I think a lot of creatives, this is a fact. A lot of creatives don't know how to market and sell themselves and sell their art.
Yes, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think one of the hardest thing to do is to sell your art. But then also when you start to try to sell your art, you realize people actually care about you, the artist, more than they care about your art, which is a more difficult thing to do, is to sell yourself. And like the story I was telling you before I got rolling, like as soon as I get that question, hey, Joe, tell me about yourself. I'm like, what? Tell you about what? My name. Like it is difficult. So I understand, you know, the challenges when it comes to being an artist, a creative, trying to promote the work you've made. And it's even more difficult if you don't think your art is up to par, if you're measuring yourself up against the giants that's out there, you put that thing so well, because at least from my perspective, I think that when people are looking at the entertainment industry, right, they're seeing the peak of the mountain. They're seeing the greatest, like the top 0.1% of the creatives, right? But guess what? The mountain is made up of everybody else. Everybody else. We are all in the everybody else category. And there is a lot of love and a lot of passion and a lot of dedication and sacrifices that is in the everybody else. Because like, you could just imagine like a person who lives in like where you live or where I live, and we're looking at, you know, like, oh, the only way you can make it in the industry is to move to Los Angeles. So you would uproot yourself and move all the way to Los Angeles, to a city where you don't know anyone, taking all this risk just for the chance that you might get to do the thing that you love. And that right there is something that I think is worth considering. But I am also, the further I go into this journey, I realize the consumer is a consumer. I'm a consumer. You're a consumer. Yes, I want to care about everybody else who helped make this wonderful thing, but I also just care that I got a good product. So I try to understand both sides of it. But man, there is a lot of wonderful people in the industry who are really, really, really giving it all that you probably will never know about.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, because there are just so many people, especially in my circles as an anarchist and somebody who runs in a sort of on the outside of things in a lot of ways. There are a lot of people who stand out there on that outside, and they like to point a lot of fingers and say that this person is wasting their time doing this and shouldn't be doing this, and this should be better, and these people and that, and they always have a chance to poke at the stuff that sticks through the top of those, that small percentage at the top that you're talking about. And it frustrates me, because on a lot of levels, not just because I have a father that is a hard worker that makes movies and has been doing so for years and nobody's ever heard of him, you know, but he loves his movies and he's made great movies, and people have heard of some of the movies that he's contributed to. But the fact is that he is just one of many, many people, again, that are there doing their hard work and doing what they love. And it has nothing to do with the weirdos and the freaks and the show that goes on, the stuff that you see on the nightly news. There's so much more to that. And the reason that it's easy for me to come to that conclusion is the comic books back there. I own a comic book shop. I've been a collector of comic books for a long time. And comic books are another place where people that don't understand the industry, don't know what goes on in creating comic books, and they take it for granted. You were talking about when you go into the store and you just pick the movie off the shelf, and it's like, didn't take anything to do that. I just walked in there and there's the movie, and ta-da. Yeah. But there's all of this. There's people. There's people. Yes, and people. And there's people that It's one of the things, you know, it's happened in the movies, it's happened in video games, it's happened in comic books, and we're dealing with it socially. And that's this idea that it's not, that reality is not inclusive. Movies aren't inclusive, that comic books aren't inclusive, video games aren't inclusive. Everybody's excluded from these things, except that that's not true. It's demonstrably not true. It maybe if you're looking at, again, at these guys that are at the top, the peak of the industries or whatever, maybe they haven't included as much, but what about all of the rest of the mountain that they're built on? What about all of the rest of, if you're reading just Marvel and DC, there are a thousand other publishers. There are thousands of other comic books out there. Man. There's not a story in Marvel and DC that suits your interests. There's one out there somewhere.
That's right.
And so they did that to the comic book industry. They did that to the video game industry. Say, oh, you're not inclusive. When people like you, hardworking people in those industries and in those spaces know full well that that's just not true. And that those people are nitpicking what they can see. They're not looking for the rest. And they don't even care about the rest. They're probably just running their mouth to find something to complain about.
Yeah, no, I could not agree more, man. There is, man, like if you look across industries, and I'm glad you mentioned about the comic books, because like if you ask any regular consumer, oh, what are the top comic books? They'll say, oh, Marvel or DC, and they'll stop at that. But that's not true. That is not true. There is a lot of love and a lot of creativity that is in the rest of the industry. And yes, it is so much easier to point a finger and say, like, even when people are like, oh, superhero movies are dead. No, you're just tired of Marvel. Like, that's all you, like, how many, the past three superhero movies you saw, who made it? Marvel or DC? Okay, you're just tired of the same formula coming out of these people. If you love superhero movies, look elsewhere, because I guarantee you there is someone in the corner of the world and the internet who's making a superhero movie that you will fall in love with. But you have to, the thing about it is like, and again, I have to, what I do for myself so I don't like, so that I can not go insane, is I have to play both sides, right? I have to like, here's the problem. Yes, you got to go look, but also I understand you're a consumer. I don't go, if I'm tired of buying McDonald's, okay, yeah, I might like get on Google and find the next big chain, right? I'm not going to do all the extra. I'm hungry. I just want a burger. So I'm going to find the next. So I get it as a consumer that you just want what's readily available to you. So I can forgive that. But man, if the effort can be given, you will find a lot of things. And I think there's something currently in that's circulating within our industry where someone found a YouTuber who made a short film. I forgot the name of the movie. I think it's called The Backroom. Correct.
Backroom. And then there was just another one, that Iron Lung movie that was just a video game that some guy created. Yeah.
Correct. Like there, like if they took the time to look like this, like they just did with these two films, I guarantee you they will find like whatever people are generally complaining about within the movie and the creative industry. It just takes someone who has the resources looking elsewhere. Like, I was just thinking about this the other, like, I literally yesterday, I was like, man, if, like, because I think that's what A24 did, which is, like, they had an assistant who was searching, who found the, and then they were able to turn that into a feature. So I think if the, maybe not the big, big guys, but, like, the middle tier guys looked and took the time to see other talent that's outside their ecosystem, I think they would start finding the stories that will grab the audience back. Because again, people like to look at the top and say, oh, it's broken. Not really. Like, people still love going to the movies. I love going to the movies. People love, they just don't want to go to the movies to see the same thing they've seen a bajillion times, right? So if they take the time to go look, they will find the kind of stories and creatives that make the kind of art that people will get out of their home and go to the theater, go see. And the same thing for music and you know, concerts and comic books and books. And like the world of creative people is still alive and well. It just takes a little bit more effort, you know? So
it always has. And it only it will only take more effort because there are more people and there's more access. And it's, yes. The more there is, the more effort it's going to take for the conscious consumer, since we're talking about consumers, to get what they want out of what's there. It's not that it's not there. It's that they have to know how to find it. They have to know where to go and look for it. And it's getting harder, of course, with AI. Now we got AI coming in and doing all these things. And I'm not one of these guys that hates on AI at all. Being a creative, being somebody who draws and sculpts and paints and will occasionally write. And obviously I do production and music, and I was a DJ for a long time. I don't even want to say how many years. I've done these things. And so I don't hate on AI. I just see it as another tool. But you mentioned a really good point that's going to separate everybody from the AI. The AI is going to be there, and people are already accepting it, and they don't even know. They can't even tell the difference, most of them. They're completely clueless. And in fact, they choose the AI because it's perfect. Mm-hmm. And that's how you tell that it's AI, because it's perfect. There's no errors. Humans make errors. Humans do things. Humans don't look perfect. Humans don't make perfect action. So that's one of the ways people will be able to tell the difference between AI and reality as we're going forward. But you mentioned how you threw the premiere, and that it was the first time that sort of people were coming up to you and they were interested in you because they saw the work. And when people see creative work, they want to know who it's attached to. Yes. A lot of times that's the connection, right? Is it you have you hear a song on the radio and go, wow, that's amazing. Who is that? What is that? And you go and you look it up and say, oh, wow, that's that person from this little town in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, how the hell did they become famous? And man, they just all of a sudden they're taking the world by storm, and it's the biggest song in the world. And there's a connection. There's a human connection. There's that, oh, wow, look at that person succeed. Look at what they've been able to do, where they come from and who they are and all that. And there's no that connection is missing from all of this AI creativity and things that are out there. So yeah, it may be fun and it may be interesting and maybe worth watching, but when it comes down to it, you're going to miss that connection. There's not going to be that real human connection in there. And I think that's not just an AI thing. I think that's when you get to that top tier, you lose that human connection. You get some of these guys that, yeah, they're doing the best they can. I'm sure they're just like everybody else. Even those top tier guys, they want to make their thing and they want it to be good and they want people to accept it and they want it to be right and all of this. But at some point past a certain level in the corporate world, I don't care what it is, movies, music, groceries, it doesn't matter what it is. At some point in the corporate world, you get past the point where the artist and the creativity are what's important and the money becomes what's more important.
Yes, man. I agree with that. And before I get to that part, I want to echo back on the human connection aspect of it, because, you know, even the movie that we talked about that's succeeding right now, I think the reason why it's succeeding is because this particular creative have built an audience who cares about their work, you know? And I think, like, yes, people might consume AI and think it's perfect, totally fine. But so I think there was like a song that went viral not too long ago. It was like, I think it's a song by Papa Hute, if I'm not saying the name incorrectly. It went viral, and then everyone loved the music, and then when people started looking for it, they discovered it was made with AI, and everyone was equally disappointed because you felt what you thought was a human expressing their heart. Right. And then you like me, it's just like what you said is like, if I hear a song that I connect with, the next immediate thing is like, I want to know who made this, because I want to follow them. I want to join their journey. I want to see what they make next. I want to eventually see them in person. I want to see them perform. I want to like be a part of their atmosphere, the ecosystem. If I watch a great movie, I want to know who made the movie. It's not just me because I'm a creative person, but I think that is kind of human nature. We do like to connect, right? As much as, which is also kind of what Paradox Universe is about, is like, as much as we focus on what divides us a lot of the time, there's also a core part of us who believe in connection, who like to, we like part of the reason why concerts work and movie theaters work is because strangers can commune in a space and just be about this particular art and this artist for this moment in time, regardless of your background. Like, we all agree that we like this thing. We like this art and this artist, and we're here for it. So I think that part of art, you know, will still be there. And I think that part of art will continue to be there because I think that is just nature in us. And yes, also the people at the top are also human beings. Absolutely. But I equally understand that at some point, someone is going to say, do I make this artistic decision or do I rather feed my kids? You know, and that's a way, it always comes down to that. Someone's like, I could stick my neck out for this artist and this art, or I could go with this tried and true thing that's going to protect my job so that I can pay my mortgage. So I can forgive that. I can understand it. Are you going to go to bat and risk losing your job so that your kids can be hungry? You probably won't. And I understand it. So I think that's my thing, is always trying to play, just understand both sides thinking so that I keep my frustration and anxiety at a minimum. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the difference between mass produced product and artisan product. I mean, it really is. That's all we're talking about. That's the only difference here. And if you understand, well, you said it right away at the beginning. If you don't understand the difference between a big budget movie and a small budget movie, then you probably shouldn't be watching and judging small budget movies. I mean, really, yes. Truly, yes. You probably shouldn't be judging big budget movies either, because big budget movies don't get made unless there's some small budget movies that got made first. I mean, these people don't just appear every once in a while. You know, we're talking about it now, the sort of YouTube phenomenon, the TikTok phenomenon, where something just out of the gate is blown up and it's just huge. But that's the rare thing. That's not the, everybody else has to work for it. And it takes a lot of work. And in cases, a lot of cases, especially when you're talking about the top tier, you're talking about people who put in a lifetime. A lifetime of work. Yep.
Man, yeah, no, it's mind-boggling to think about the amount of, like, I have a filmmaker friend, and he probably doesn't know that he inspires me, but his name is Paul Winters. I'm going to shout you out, Paul Winters. He is old man Winters now, and he is now making what he considered his best work yet. Right. And I'm seeing the trailers for his film come out and I'm looking at it. And I'm like, wow, this looks amazing. Right. He's a man who has put in a lifetime of work to get to where he is. Like sometimes it just takes that long. Like, it just takes long for you to some of us artists, we just, like, half of the time is us just trying to figure out ourselves. OK, we are trying to figure out how to live and let life inspire us. And then we figuring out how to take your craft and then let life inspire the craft, and so you can, you know, bring it to the world. So it takes time. It takes a lot of work for the majority of artists to get to some kind of recognition. So yeah, man, I understand and I empathize with it completely.
Well, and you were talking about it just a minute ago, in fact, and it just reminded me that I saw a interview with Todd McFarlane, and Todd McFarlane is the guy who created Spawn, and Spawn is the number one independent selling comic book of all time. It spawned Image, literally, and they are a third party creator house, and so they bring people in and make the best possible terms that they can get and let them keep their properties and keep their, you know, make as much money and everything that they can on their properties and still help them get published. And so McFarlane's been at it a long time. And he was talking about, he just still blows his mind to this day that he did this back in, you know, 1991, 1992, broke away from Marvel, broke away from DC, started his own thing with other people, not just him. And it's hugely successful. And extremely hugely successful. And he talks about how it just blows his mind that he will look at somebody over there at Marvel who will spend 5, 10, 15, 20 years doing something for Marvel where they could have been doing something for themselves this whole time, even if they were doing, you know, a bunch for Marvel and a little bit for me, a little bit for me, you know, that sort of thing, and ride their own thing and create their own thing and have something to show for it in sort of large percentage numbers. Whereas you work for Marvel, yeah, it's a steady paycheck. You were just talking about this. It's a steady paycheck. The kids are going to get fed. Family's going to be, you know, comfortable, but it's a check for Marvel. And it's also a phone call one day. We don't need you no more. We 35 years of work. We don't need you no more. Yep. That doesn't happen when you're the boss.
No, it doesn't. It does not. It's a mindset shift for most people to make, to even consider that, oh, wait, I can, this thing I'm working for this company to do, I can also do it for myself. And I think most people get, I don't even know if it crossed their mind. And if they cross their mind, they might look at the scale of the company that they're working for and let that cripple them and say, okay, no, I don't think I could do this for myself. But I think the smartest thing to do is use that steady income to then make stuff on the weekends. Like, I think, like you're saying, like, that's probably the least you can do as a creative person is like, yeah, feed your kids, have your steady job, but also feed your soul on the weekends and make stuff for yourself. At the very least, the worst case scenario, no one has to see it, right? No one has to see it, but at least you've made something that belongs to you that was fulfilling to you. So I think I will highly encourage more people to do that if they're not already doing so, for sure.
Well, like, so many people are banking on the idea that if they make something that they have to, sell it, that it has to be approved by somebody else in that sense. No, not necessarily. No. I don't think so. I think that, first of all, if that's the thought, you might have the wrong approach. Yes. You might be coming at it from the wrong side of things. It should be making you happy. It should be what makes you happy. And because otherwise, it's just another job when it comes down to it. And if it's just going to be another job, you know, it's like renting a house instead of buying one, right? A lot less responsibility. It's the easy way, but it's not yours.
Right. Exactly, man. Well said. I say to people, if you approach art incorrectly, yes, it will definitely become a job. But here's the thing. There's better paying jobs out in the world. So you might as well go get a better paying job if you just want a job, you know, like that will probably be your better option versus letting art become a job. So don't work on it. Absolutely. Be dedicated. Absolutely. But don't let it turn into another thing that you hate doing, because there's no point to it at that. You know, there's no point. Yeah, you can. Someone else will pay you more to be miserable. I promise you.
Please. Yeah. I love that. They pay you more to be miserable. That's beautiful. It's absolutely true. And it doesn't have to be about creatives either, because the comic book shop is a perfect example for me. I'm not making the comic books. I'm just reselling Marvel and DC and Image and all the other independents. So it's not mine. But the comic book shop is mine.
Yes,
you know, it's my store. It's my, you know, it's my thing there. And so I'm doing my thing. I'm having my fun, and it may not pay real well, but it doesn't matter. It's not, that's not what it's about. It's about one, I think people need to read.
Yes.
I think comic
yes.
books are very valuable in getting people to read. I don't know. Yeah. I could probably realistically say I hear this story at least once a week. Somebody comes into the store, says my son or daughter, or grandchild, whatever, they're autistic. They don't read. They won't do the work at school. The only thing that we've ever found that they are interested in is comic books. Well, here you go. I got half a million of them right here.
Yep,
dig in.
Right.
Help you get them to that child and help that child become whoever they're going to be. I don't even care. It doesn't matter. But they just have a chance. And I know there's value in it. You know, I know that's the important thing for me. The important thing is being there, selling the comic books, putting that beautiful art and those words and those ideas into other people's hands.
I agree, man. I agree. I love your perspective. I love the way you think, because you don't have to be the person that makes the art. You could be the person that sells the art to other people. You could be the person that, like, there's so many different ways for you to create, like, your own space within the art world. Within any space that fascinates you, there's always a way to create your own thing. And to me, that own thing is like, it's like you need a hobby, right? Like, yeah, at least make it a hobby first, you know? But your hobby is your own thing, and that will help you find your way. And I love the thing about comic books helping people read, because yeah, man, I much rather read a good comic book than without a long, you know, book. Like, that's me. I'm visual, you know, I'm a filmmaker. So I love comic. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of males are. I think a lot of men are. That's how we learn. I think it's fairly obvious that we learn by seeing things and touching things and feeling, and that works for us. It works better for us. And I just, obviously, comic books are like a lot of things that not everybody is into. They don't understand. They don't know it. They don't know what they're about. They think comic books are for kids, when the fact is, the reality is that no, comic books aren't written by kids for kids. They're written by adults for adults.
Adults, yes.
Yeah, there are some comic books that are for kids, but mostly they're adults writing material
adult
for
stories.
Other adults,
and
ideas and things that other adults would resonate with. So it's a little bit of a silly thing, and I always find it funny when somebody suggests that they're particular form of reading or the type of book that they're reading or whatever is better than another one. It's reading. It's just reading. Or that even that reading is better than watching a movie necessarily, especially when what you're reading is for entertainment. Now, if you're reading to learn, like, you know, electronics or something, you know, like
that's
that,
different.
That's different. Yeah, but if you're reading to be entertained, it's just entertainment. Don't high horse me on your ability to read. But the fact is, the comic books, the language in comic books is more complicated than most things that are written and that most people understand and read. We only got a couple of a minute left. Any last thoughts?
Wow.
Anything you want to jump out there real quick? Yeah, we burned it off, man.
Man, well, first, it's been a wonderful conversation. We could be here for a couple more hours just talking. So thank you so much. I usually is the part where you'll promote your movie. I don't want to promote the movie. I just want to let this conversation sit where it is in terms of, hey, go out and make something. Go out and do something that fulfills you. The world is noisy, right? The world is noisy. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of reasons to be upset, to be anxious, to be frustrated. But then there's also a lot happening where you can connect with another human being, right? Like picking up a comic book and reading it, being in the store, seeing someone else who's reading that, having a conversation about it, going out watching a movie, listening to great music, reading a great book and sharing it with someone else. Like, find more reasons in life to be connected than divided. And I'll let it be there.
And that's a great place to leave it. I'm not saying another thing. We'll see y'all next time. Thank you so much, Joseph.
All right.
What do you use semi-automatic weapons for?
To defend yourself against home invaders, but also, let's be clear, against tyranny.
You said that you could use a semi-automatic weapon to fight tyranny.
Sure.
You mean you'd use it against American troops?
The very existence of the Second Amendment is designed purposefully to empower the people to be able to resist the force of tyranny used against them to step over their natural rights given to them by God. That is why the Second Amendment exists.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network.